This is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara, and this is the Kenai Conversation. On today's episode of the Kenai Conversation, we're joined by Zen Kelly and Virginia Morgan, both of whom are former members of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District's Board of Education, to talk about their time on the board and where they think the district is heading. Thank you both for being here participating today.
It's a pleasure.
So
thank you for having us.
Yeah. So as I said, I would like to start with introductions. If you could tell me just a little bit about yourself and why you decided to run for the school board in the first place and how long you served. And I'll throw it to whoever would like to start.
Well, I ran 6 years ago, and actually I didn't run for election, but there was an opening shortly after the election. And so the board was tasked with appointing a member, and I had briefly thought about running for school board in the past, and it just somehow the timing just seemed right. And I decided to put my name in and interview for the position. And actually, in thinking about our conversation today, I went back and looked at my application to the school board and read the article that the person in charge of communications at the district had written, just to kind of refresh my memory of where I was 6 years ago. And it was a big year. It was 2019, and we'd just gone through the Swan Lake fire, and there were teacher negotiations going on, and or had been going on right before I was appointed. And then shortly after, COVID hit. And so a lot has happened, and I had to kind of think back, like, wow, last 6 years, it's been a long time. We packed a lot in, but I live in Cooper Landing, and I grew up here, and I had the opportunity to move back with my family as an adult, and I really love the small town life. I absolutely value small schools and think they're a very important piece of the district. And I felt like I had experience, and I had something that I could offer to the district. I felt like that, you know, a wide variety of experience that was an important piece of the conversation. And I decided community service has always been really important to me, and this was one way I could give back to my community. So I'm really happy that I took that step. It was a little stressful putting myself out there, but I'm really pleased at the last 6 years and what the relationships I made and the things that we accomplished, and it's a good experience.
Yeah, sure. A lot like Virginia, I started my service on the board through appointment almost 10 years ago. It'll be 10 years this February. So there was an opening on the board. I was encouraged by a current board member to apply and was selected by appointment first, and then ran in two different elections, uncontested, but almost made it to 10 years on the board. And I like Virginia, I kind of went back and reread my initial candidate statement when I ran. And it was kind of eye-opening, just how naive you are as a school board member, brand new school board member. But you know, it all centered around financial accountability and financial leadership, you know, trying to get the district on track with finances. And it also points to the long-standing problem with the school funding. 10 years ago, we were actually dealing with pretty much the same things we've been dealing with lately. So it's not a problem that has gone away. And I think that was my main thing on the board, was to really dig deep into the finances and try to help provide that ability to explore it.
Well, and I mean, Virginia mentioned COVID, which feels like such a gigantic piece of both of the time, both of your terms on the school board. But I do want to talk about, before, like before 2020s, and you're talking about school finances. What were the big issues like that the school board was considering when you joined the group?
You know, it was a lot of the same issues that we deal with today. Per pupil funding, having inflation eat at that BSA figure. Back then, we had just come into the new district cost factor, where they apply a different cost factor from an ICER study that was done. And so that actually had an influx of money into our district. And at that time, deciding what to do with additional revenues is where the programmatic staffing came from in our middle schools and our high schools. We decided to take that money. And at the time, the current, the most important thing was graduation rate. And so we wanted to increase graduation rate by increasing the funding at other junior high and high school levels. But a lot of the same constraints were being dealt with back then. Is how do we maintain our buildings? How do we provide funding, have enough teachers, keep that low PTR that we kept throughout my tenure, one of the lowest districts in the state. Because we put a lot of importance on the fewer number of kids per teacher having better outcomes.
Well, when I had applied, I had three priorities that I had included in my what I wanted to share with the board. And looking back at those, I was like, I don't know if my three priorities would even change now. I feel like maybe we made progress in some areas. I don't think that it. So the three things that I had felt were important to me was championing the unique diversity of our school district, remembering the importance of the small schools and the choices that we have in the district. We have quite a variety of options, and that still is very important to me. And I think that we've done well with that. There's always been a concern of what schools might close, and I was especially concerned about small schools closing because there are so limited options in small communities, and that's an ongoing concern. I don't think that we've solved that. My second goal or priority was advocating for adequate funding, and nothing has changed. We still are having to advocate for that adequate funding because it's not a priority at the state level, in my opinion. And there were things that I saw over time as someone who grew up in this district that we had lost, our music and art and library programs, and some of the opportunities that older generations had, our younger generations did not have. But I've also seen increased opportunities in areas like, say, middle college and CTE programs that we have really put a lot of effort towards the last few years. And then my third priority at that time was finding ways to increase employee morale and that sense of team between the certified, classified staff, the board, the administration, because we had just gone through a really contentious negotiation. And I feel like we made a lot of progress in the last 6 years. I felt some really good progress in that area, but it's an ongoing thing that we always have to strive to work on those relationships and connections. And so I don't know that my priorities would change if I were to run again at this stage, because those are still all really important goals that I think we continue to need to work towards.
Was there any, I'm wondering, like, when you have identified, that you want to put your name out for consideration for a seat on the school board, did you have a good sense of like what exactly the school board did, or I'm wondering like for folks who maybe don't understand the difference between like the authority of the school board versus the authority of the superintendent, like what exactly did you know what you were getting into as far as what decisions you were going to have to make?
I'm going to jump right in here and say no. And thank goodness that Zen was there to be a mentor for me because I really relied on him a lot to help me navigate some of that. Before I put my name out there, I definitely took inventory with my family. It was a family decision because I knew it was going to take a lot of time, but I had no idea how people would reach out to board members to solve problems that board members do not have the authority to solve. And I really appreciated Zen's wisdom and expertise to help me navigate some of that challenge.
Well, I appreciate the accolades, but I was in the same place when I first ran for Board of Education. I really did not understand the roles and responsibilities of how the board interacts with administration, with the superintendent. So it was a quick catch up, and just like Virginia, I had my own mentors that had been on the board for a long time. Joe Arness, long-standing board member. Of course, Penny Bond is still on the board right now, and they do help catch up new board members. The existing board members help mentor and provide some guidance. I think the big wake-up call as people are looking to get on the board is just that. What are the roles and responsibilities of the school board versus the roles and responsibilities of our one employee, the superintendent? And how the management of the district really falls in line with administration, and the board can make a change at the top level because they are the one that hires and fires the superintendent. But really, the board establishes these goals and the general direction for the superintendent to put into place as he actually runs the district. So it was an eye-opener for sure.
Is there something you found yourself like kind of consistently butting up against as far as people reaching out and wanting you to solve like a specific problem and you being like, this is not, we don't have the authority to do this?
I think in general, you end up since you're the conduit to your constituency, the public. People think to call you when they have either personnel issues or a problem with their kid in school, and it's nice, but we are the conduit. We basically let them know the process of how to, if it comes to a complaint, how to navigate the process of working through the difficulty that they're having. But yeah, I think there was a lot more pushback with the budgetary decisions that we were having to make over, at least for me, over individual parent complaints about what's happening. It was more of a global thing when it came to pools, when it came to theaters, when it came to cutting sports and extracurriculars. We definitely got a lot of that. And that falls within our purview because we're the ones that authorize the budgetary avenue for the district to follow. So.
And I think that once I learned the role of the board and had a better sense of how to navigate some of that, I felt like part of my role was just educating the public. And I feel like the community, especially, it was not so much, Cooper Landing and Hope and Moose Pass, they're so tiny, but Seward a little larger, when those community members would reach out for help with issues that really were more local building issues or personnel issues. Once I educated them on the process, they were very receptive to that and understood. And I don't think that that was a continual problem. It was just different people that would reach out at different times, but,
And I do want to dive in like a little bit deeper to some of the topics that we've already talked about or brought up. But I guess, we're talking today as, myself and two former school board members. We just had a local election. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about why you decided, not to run again. There's no term limits for school board members, so you could, in theory, do this ad infinitum. So why did you decide to step back at this time?
go first on this one. It was a hard decision. But I think that new ideas, new energy is actually good for the Board of Education. It's hard when you've been on it for a decade. It becomes an element of who you are. So for me, it was a mixture of just where I am in life and time commitments and what I'm able to provide the board. I have my own business, which is a full-time job, more than a full-time job that I've run all throughout my board service. And as things get contentious, it pulls more and more time away. Being president for 4 years definitely had an impact. And I think, just again, new energy is good for the board to bring in new ideas. And I wanted to allow that by just stepping out and basically announcing, I'm not going to run for re-election and let the community support somebody that reflects the values that they want to see the district to.
And I think for me, I probably mulled the idea over for about a year. I was really back and forth. I was conflicted. I really enjoyed the work of this job, and I appreciated how much I learned about the district, having grown up in this district and taught in this district, and currently have a spouse working for the district and children. I still was just amazed at how much I learned throughout the whole 6 years, and I loved it. So I was torn up until the very last day of putting in our candidacy paperwork. I was preparing for the possibility of possibly entering the race again, especially if there wasn't someone else stepping up, because I really didn't know what we were going to have. But personally, things were kind of changing in my life. My children are both in Anchorage now, and we're kind of in an empty nest situation here. And I just felt like my priorities were changing a little bit family-wise, and wanting to kind of move on to do some other things. And I won't lie, I was a little tired. It's a lot. And for me, when I do something, I put my all into it. And so it was all-consuming. It felt like a full-time job. My mind was on school board stuff almost constantly. So I was welcoming the break by that time that came up.
Well, in my mind, when I'm kind of charting out these major themes, right, like school funding seems to be a big one. And we've talked about COVID a few times, and we certainly don't need to spend the entire conversation on it, but it just seems like a huge thing that happened. And especially the school board, and I'm just remembering this anecdotally, was making so many decisions that impacted, every single student, every single employee. I remember a lot of contentious school board meetings. And so I'm wondering, when you look back on that time, what stands out to you as far as how maybe things that I guess first take me back to the earlier days of the pandemic. What was it like navigating that as a school board member?
Who wants to you want to start, Virginia?
In so many ways, it really did feel like flying blind. I mean, none of us had gone through anything like this, and we were doing the best we could at every moment as we went along with the information we had available. And it was a challenge in so many ways that I don't think any of us were really prepared to know exactly how to navigate.
Yeah, I definitely echo that. It really was the unknown. We did not have adequate information that we were able to use to drive a lot of the decisions. There's a lot of guesswork happening, and this overarching feeling to keep kids safe, our staff safe, our families safe. It was one of the roughest times in the 10 years that I served on the board, if not the roughest. So I think I stepped into the president's role in October of 2020, and the pandemic started in March, so we were just getting going, back to school, and the in and the outs, and closing schools to requiring masks or not requiring masks. It was a very challenging time. It was just fraught with a lot of non-information, and a little bit of disinformation was out there. So it was hard. We were doing the best we could at the time, and it really truly divided our communities quite a bit. So it was a challenge during that time.
Well, and I'm wondering how you would, like, now with the benefit of hindsight, how are you, in your mind, how would you characterize the way the district responded as far as, you've talked about keeping kids and employees safe. What was your strategy, or I guess, North Star as you were navigating a lot of that, whether it was masking or keeping schools open or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I actually look back at it and think that our district did a really good job. The only comparisons we have is looking at what other schools were doing, what other districts were doing, both statewide and across the nation. And I think within the state, we did a really good job riding the line between in-person school and having kids come to school when we could, and versus closing down. Anchorage remained closed for the majority of the pandemic, and we didn't. We were doing in-person school. I, looking back on it, we made the best decisions we could at the time, and I'm not sure. The only reason I would change anything now is having additional information that has come forward, through science, through what we've learned about COVID, but otherwise people may not agree with me, but I do think overall we made the proper decisions given the information we had at the time.
Yeah, and I agree.
Right. Well, in one of the things that I'm wondering how, up until when you step down from the board, what are some of the ways that the district is still dealing with the after effects of the pandemic, whether it be, learning loss or chronic absenteeism, just some of these other larger things. Are there any, where, if at all, do you see the trace effects of that incident in our history, in the district now?
I was just talking. I was visiting my kids this weekend in Anchorage, and my daughter and I were in a social setting, and she was talking just in some of the ways the pandemic had affected her because it hit when she was at the end of her junior year, and she still laments the fact that she did not get to go to a prom at all during high school. And then we were talking about, well, my son was entering high school during the pandemic, and then my husband is a teacher. Like every new grade that he teaches, we think about what age those kids were when the pandemic started. And I especially for young people who are developing, like whatever age they were at, there definitely was an effect on their development. And I think that we're going to still be seeing the effects of that for a time. But I think for sure the absenteeism is something I noticed afterwards that really changed a lot because it became more normal for people to not be in person at school. And I think also the increase in homeschool. I think that part of that, I think that people realized they were able to educate their kids at home and saw the opportunity there. And in some ways, I think that they realized that those who were able to educate their kids at home, I think they saw that maybe they had some more opportunities available to them that they didn't have in person just because of the funding issues we're dealing with in the state. And so those are two things that I noticed an increase in that I think the pandemic definitely affected. And then, as I said, every generation, whether however they were developing socially, were in some way dramatically affected.
Yeah, I would agree. So learning loss is real. I mean, it did occur during the pandemic, and you can look at some of our test scores where you have those early grades that K1 and 2 where the actual foundations of learning are put down, and those kids are in fourth and fifth grade right now. And so if you look at assessments, if you look at the data, you can kind of see this bubble where, kids don't get a second chance at laying down the foundations that are going to help them learn to read and in future years. And so that's a real thing that will follow a certain group of kids throughout their educational career. Also, absenteeism, again, I agree with Virginia, where in-person school and being present in school and previous to COVID, we emphasized that 100% attendance and anybody over 90 gets special. That's coming back now. We're seeing the resurgence of on a statewide level and even our district basically approaching chronic absenteeism as a way of contributing to learning loss. And finally, I would say that really COVID opened up alternative school options to parents. It forced parents out of a comfort bubble into pursuing either a correspondence or homeschool option or looking at what charter schools could do. And so, we're definitely still seeing the long-term effects of having that impact our brick and mortar schools where people were forced into a situation that they realized, oh, it's either better for their family or better for the learning environment of their child. And so we saw that surge in correspondence during COVID, and it has come back down. We did have a lot of re-enrollment into our brick and mortar schools, but we do still see the correspondence schools increasing in enrollment every year as people are taking that option to educate their child.
And I do want to talk about school choice in a bit. But you mentioned test scores, which I feel like is just something that's a conversation that never ends, whether it's in Juno or, just within the school board makeup. When you look at the district's most recent round of standardized test scores, whether you want to look at, AK Star or Map Growth or any of those, how are you interpreting those? What do those say to you, I guess?
I think what they say to me is that we're growing, we're improving. And so you don't get to the finish line in 1 year. And so I am glad that the conversation is coming off of percentile ranking to more of how we're growing as a district, how we're improving every year as a district. So I also, during my term on the school board, we our statewide assessments been a mess. I mean, going from PEAKS to the AK Star and trying to have a year that we could provide a baseline, we didn't get that until about 3 or 4 years ago. So we just finally have an assessment that allows us to project growth and have this baseline where we're not realigning the cut scores, So I think the district is doing a really good job in improving every year. I think the emphasis on literacy is right where we need to be. And I see the district making changes to kind of increase test scores. And so it ties into that funding where the funding mechanism was withhold funding until you improve. And that's just not the way to fund education. But We are seeing improvements across the board in our test scores. Are they where they need to be? No, but I believe that our district is approaching it with the right rigor to get those scores up.
And I've appreciated seeing the increase in test scores, but I've never felt like those show the true success or possibility that a student has. And I think we especially see that with like different races in our state. You know, I still need to delve into this a little deeper, but I was recently looking at a report showing the number of seniors that are being awarded the Alaska Performance Scholarship. And when you look at the test scores of some of those students, they're not really high, but they are showing success. They're proving success in a lot of areas. And, you know, testing is just not, some of these tests I do not believe are the best way to assess the actual learning and ability of these students. And so I think that I'm hopeful that at some point we will have a better balance. You know, use that in a way to make sure we're improving, but also knowing that there are a lot of students that don't do well with testing, but have so much potential for great success and contribution to society. And we need to remember that our kids are so much more than just a test score.
Well, and I think you make a good point, and that's certainly something that the board I think was has done a good job of articulating as far as students are more than their test scores. It does seem like a lot of, I don't know if you want to call them public education skeptics, but that is the metric that they look at. And you know, if they're looking at test scores, they're saying, well, you know, most of our kids, they can't read, they can't do math. And I'm wondering, you know, when you encounter somebody like that, are you emphasizing the growth over time, the new there are standardized tests, but a standardized testing method, or that just seems like a very common complaint or criticism that's lobbed at the district. And I'm wondering if you have down like a kind of rote response or you know talking points that you come back at them with.
To go first because I think Zen's going to be able to answer this more articulately, but I do think that it is an incredibly complicated thing to understand, and I still feel like I don't have a great handle on it. But the test scores, like our state test scores, they're set by each state, and so they're not even necessarily a great comparison to other states. And so I don't think that because a student is maybe not proficient in reading necessarily means they can't read. I think that there's just so much confusion about what these test scores actually mean. And so when I have conversations, I try to remind people what these are testing and what they're not testing, and how it's being compared or used to others is it's just a dipstick. It's a little piece of the larger puzzle, and it is frustrating when it's constantly used to punish schools and districts, you know, for the public education. But it's just become such an emphasis, and you know, since I don't know, I guess my memory of when I was teaching and No Child Left Behind came about, you know, like that has just been the focus, is leaning more and more to testing. And I think that in the process, we are losing the focus on what I believe is a well-rounded education that includes music and art and drama and, you know, technical skills, all these other things that make the whole human.
I really couldn't agree more with what Virginia said. I think when you take these summative assessments and try to define that this is what makes a child successful or not, that is not a way to look at it. And so, approaching education for the individual child to have the success that they need. I mean, it involves so much more than a single summative assessment. So, I kind of want to invite people sometimes who are railing on our percentile scores to join me and take the ninth grade math AKSR practice test and just see how good you do. It's an eye opener for an adult to sit down and try to take some of the assessments. Our emphasis on CTE and making sure that we are graduating kids that are ready for life and not college ready, but life ready. And so that can take so many different paths. And the overemphasis on these test scores, I think has been detrimental. I don't believe that test scores are how you define accountability. And I think there's many more ways to approach accountability in education than comparing your test scores to kids across the nation.
I mean, I guess, is there a metric that you think is that better reflects how much students have learned, I guess, over the course of the school year? Or I guess it sounds like what I'm hearing from both of you is that, tests don't show everything. Students are more than a test score. Are there other metrics that you look at to gauge whether or not the academic programs that are offered in school districts, the school districts' school buildings are sufficient and adequate?
I personally look at several things. I look at what our extracurriculars and co-curriculars do. I look at the success that we see in kids learning real life rules by participating in sports. I look at going to a graduation is an excellent way to see who is succeeding and what they're doing. All of our CTE offerings and what the school district does for students to get them training for the real world, Microsoft certifications, things like that. We're rolling out more and more of those certifications every year. And that's training kids for what they're going to need when they enter the job force.
And I think in addition to, having multiple connections to non-academic subject areas, whether it's sports or drama or other things, I also think that another piece that's important is what relationships are these kids developing? Do they have how many adult touch points do they have in their life? And, are they able to communicate with people of all ages? There are more real life connections that are going to get them further than just looking at how they can read and how they can do math. And I will just say again, like this is one of those areas where I felt like growing up and raising kids in a small school setting was really able, it helped us to really be able to focus on that because it was a classroom with multi-age, K through 12, and we had a big senior population that came in to volunteer, and kids were learning to communicate. And I think that is learning to communicate and build those connections in your life is also really important. I'm not exactly certain how you measure that, but I think when we look at some of our programs that are dealing more with like the social emotional learning, like our Sources of Strength program in the district and such, there are actually checklists you can go through with students, like are they making these connections in their life? And I think that's as important.
Well, and like on the topic of school accountability, something that I feel like got a lot of attention in the last couple of years is charter schools just as a concept and in practice. And of course, our school district has a few of those. And they're the current school board is considering, a slate of new charter proposals this year as well. And I'm wondering, if you could maybe talk through the strengths and weaknesses of charter school programs, especially as a board member, when somebody comes to you with a proposal, what's kind of going through your mind as you evaluate whether or not this makes sense to add to the roster of what the school district offers, Peninsula students.
I'm always a fan of choice, but I think that we have to really balance and be careful that by providing more choice, we aren't taking away from what we already have. And the reality is that choice is a privilege that not all students and families have. And so we have an obligation to provide a robust education for those who don't have the ability to make some of those choices. And so I think that it's really important to be careful that if we provide more choice, it's not coming at the cost of having to close other schools because that additional choice is going to make enrollment go down elsewhere, that then provides less opportunity for some of those who are limited in the choices that they can make.
Is that something you feel like you saw while you were on the board? Like that charter schools may be taking opportunities away from traditional public schools?
Yes, I struggled with that, especially like looking at the Central Peninsula area, who has the majority of charter schools. Like on the Eastern Peninsula, there are two choices. There is the brick and mortar schools and there is the homeschool. And all of the we have five school six schools on this side of the peninsula, and those are the only two choices. But in the Central Penn, I think that definitely you see enrollment going down in some of the neighborhood public schools because there is a charter school option nearby. And what was really important to me is that if those charter school options needed to be able to provide all of the services that we are obligated to provide in a public school, including and especially the special education services. And I think that sometimes that is one of the costs that we see is a higher percentage of special education students in some of the neighborhood schools because there's fewer in the charter schools in some situations. And I think that we just have to watch very carefully that we are not segregating in some way.
I would add to that. I mean, I very much agree with what Virginia says. Is that charter schools truly highlight what parental involvement does for a child's education, and so we see very active parents in charter schools, and that translates to student success. It is a main driver of student success, which is fantastic. But I would agree with Virginia, and in my time on the board, we did get to witness, charter schools basically high grading or pulling things out, which decreases course offerings, mentorship at our other brick and mortar schools. And so we do have to approach, right? I believe the board should approach each charter, with the mindset on not only how would this benefit the kids that they're looking to serve, but what effect would it have on the other student population in that area? And I think we saw that just at the last meeting where high school charter was denied because it would negatively impact the alternative school there in the Central Penn. And those are really, really tough decisions. But I believe the board made the right decision on that one.
That was going to be my next question is that with that example in mind, where you would have fallen on that, but yeah, it's there's certainly more coming down the pipeline with charter schools even this month. So
Right.
the we talked a little bit, or Virginia, you were talking about like the homeschooling options, and that of course is another facet of the school choice conversation. there's a lot of students or school age students on the Kenai Peninsula who participate in a homeschool program that isn't Connections Homeschool, which is the one that's run by the district. And something that I know came up a few times when you both were on the board and is continues to be relevant is whether or not the district, or the extent to which the district, should be trying to recapture those students who are in a non-district homeschool program into Connections. And I'm wondering where you fall on that as far as whether you think the district is doing enough or should be doing more to kind of market Connections to those non-district homeschool students.
Well, I don't know if I have an answer for that necessarily. I think that unfortunately marketing is really important. I don't think any of us in the education field are necessarily trained for that, but we do need to do better at highlighting the choices and opportunities that a program can provide. A lot of times, I think that educators, what I observed on the board, watching people working for the district, they're so busy doing their jobs and doing them well, but you need somebody who can share that with the public because it's not in the public eye much. And I think that part of the issue with outside district homeschool programs is that it's just time. They started a lot sooner, and they had some more experience, and they had a lot of exposure, I guess you could say, across the state, and a reputation. And I think that our Connections program in the district has learned a lot and done a really great job and provided a great alternative opportunity for students. But I feel like sometimes the choices that people are making are just, I don't know. I'm going to stop there. Sorry.
I'll chip in. I'm fairly opinionated on this, mainly from a numerical standpoint. But you talk about the loss, the bleeding of kids from their residents of the Kenai Peninsula to non-connection correspondence. And the largest one is IDEA, and then we have Raven. We have other homeschool things on the peninsula. But when it comes down to its effect on the school districts, I've heard numbers as high as $10, $12 million of this bleed out from the school districts. And really, when it comes down to it, it's not that much money. It's estimated to be 1,300 kids across the peninsula that are choosing other alternative homeschool or correspondence school options. And those students are funded through the BSA at 90%. Currently, that's $59.94. When it comes down to it, and the money comes in for those kids, I think what's missing in this conversation is that, currently the number is $2,700 of that funding goes out to student allotments, and so that's 45% of what the state funding that comes for those kids goes back out to the parents. That's not money the district can use. It's not money the borough can use to offset anything, really. And so also, our school district has to provide the support for those schools. So that's certified teachers, that's an administrator, that's certain locations, and all of that staffing basically takes up another 35% of that money. Now, does that leave some headroom? Yes, it does. And we have to cover the administrative costs like we do with our charter schools and all of our other schools. So it brings that large number. If you take the number of kids that are not attending Connections and just multiply it by the BSA, or 90% of the BSA, it really puts it into perspective that the money lost to the district is not significant. Now, would it help? Absolutely. Should we be promoting our connections program as a district? Yes. And ways of doing that that we get pushback through all the time is offering sports at no charge to our connections students versus another school coming in, because we do not receive money that supports the infrastructure that you provide for non-KPBSD funded students. So, we need to be able to be out front with it, and or they, I should say, they need to be able to be out front with it, and we do have a great homeschool program here. If people choose to homeschool, I believe they should choose connections, and keep the money local, support the whole infrastructure, and have a better education for everybody in the peninsula.
Well, and the big topic that we've kind of danced around but not come at directly is school funding, which, that is just the never-ending story for public schools in Alaska, it seems like. But this was a bit of a historic year as far as you both have used the term BSA, which listeners may not know is the base student allocation, which is that base amount of money school districts get per student from the state of Alaska. And there was a BSA increase this year for the first time in many years. And so I'm wondering, can you maybe recap where we landed with that? You don't have to go through the multi-year saga of state education funding, but where are we at right now heading into this upcoming budget cycle, which is kind of already almost underway?
Yeah, I'll jump in here. So we did. We saw the largest BSA increase that we have in history of, at that $700 mark, brought in a significant amount of money to our school district. And it's now in statute. It is subject to appropriation every year. But even with that, I do want to emphasize the fact that in order to keep up with inflation and pressures on our budget, that number should have been $1,800 increase to the BSA. So less than half is what is put forward, meaning we still did the hard work for this fiscal year and made cuts to our budget and made reductions and finally passed a budget that had a bit of a surplus. That surplus is being used for negotiations at this point in time, but it's still not enough to maintain the status quo of what is needed. So, I think it'll be a challenge for the school district to continue to have to prioritize what we're able to do if we don't see any kind of factor within the formula that would provide an adjustment to inflation every year. I think that's the next step, and I hope people will advocate for is like, let's not let this stagnate over the next decade again and catch us that much further behind, but put something in there that will adjust it to a cost of living index or something that we can try to keep up. And it does need to be adjusted again to reflect the actual cost of what the district is seeing to provide an education. Otherwise, we're going to have more and more of the conversations of what ancillary items within our budget do we choose to not fund. That always goes back to stuff outside of classroom, which is sports and pools and theaters. And it's unfortunate that that conversation will have to continue, even though we did see a single large jump in funding.
And I don't have a lot to add because Zen is great on the budget topic. But like he said, education is not adjusted annually for inflation. But even the governor's spokesperson this year, earlier this year, said we annually must adjust the budget for inflation across all areas of government. That's happening in so many departments, except for education. And so the work is not done. That is a problem that we need to solve.
Yeah, I mean, given it was, I feel like it's accurate to say that it was kind of a contentious budget season. It's the talks about budget cuts just draw out so many different interest groups from around the district. And something that I know the board had has said a few times is, we want to keep these, we want to keep any cuts as far away from the classroom as possible. And I'm wondering, is that still your philosophy given, all of the budget cycles that you've been through? Or I guess right now you're obviously not on the board anymore, but if you were, where does the district go from here as far as figuring out or reconciling a future deficit?
I was going to see if Virginia would actually go first on this one.
I'll say one quick thing. One small example, and I'm sure Zen will talk more about this, but looking at our pools, they are truly a community resource. And a lot of times I think when people think about their taxes funding education, they don't realize how they're also funding their own community resource. And so I'm hopeful that that is a situation we can pull out of the budget, or the new board can pull out of the budget, because I agree, we need to keep those cuts as far away from the classroom as possible. And that's one small area that could be corrected.
Yeah, I think the struggle is real for the new board. I think they'll be tasked with the same decisions on what to prioritize. And so there's a lot of talk of school consolidation. I think it's an important topic to discuss. There's elements of it too that need to be truly scrutinized and maybe costly to provide buildings in small communities, but when you pencil things out, it's not always a savings, especially in the long term, to close facilities that serve kids that may not re-enroll in our district if they're not given the option of a local school. So I'm empathetic with the continued challenges. I don't think it's going to be any easier for this board to make these decisions. And it'll be that struggle of what priorities do they take with their core mission of educating kids on the classroom.
Well, and you mentioned an inflation adjustment to the state's education funding formula is something that you think could be a next step as far as what folks prioritize in Juneau. We've also got a gubernatorial election coming up next year, which, again, I don't think it's inaccurate to say that our current governor maybe has a bit of a contentious relationship with public education. And I'm wondering, do you see a potential for a new direction, with this, somebody new in charge of the state? Or I guess what do you think needs to change, or what would you like to see changed, when it comes to the issue of school funding in the next, year or so?
I am very hopeful that that will be the direction that we go as a state, because I think that what we don't talk about enough is how much public education drives the local economy. And I think if we were to put a higher priority on our public education system, we would see gains in so many areas across the state. And I don't think we look at that big picture quite enough. People want to move to places where there are high quality schools. People want to work in places where there are high quality schools. And so I'm hopeful that education in our state will become a higher priority in the next within the next coming years.
I'm also hopeful. I'm more hopeful that the narrative changes. I think under the current governor administration, for the past almost 8 years, it has been overall just a completely negative narrative. And I do not believe that it reflects what's actually happening in our schools and happening, especially in the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. It does not resonate with me as I visit our schools, as I talk to our students, as I see our outcomes. I said many times when I was a board member that we are not family. We absolutely are not family. I believe that to my core. and you're producing kids that are ready for the world and life and are showing many, many successes. So that's my main hope, is that as this election nears, we start to draw out a different narrative of the success of our schools and how we can make them better.
Now that the two of you are no longer on the board, do you plan to step back from like public education, the public debate on that entirely, or should folks expect to see you weighing in on future local budgetary or state issues when it comes to public education?
Can't quite stay away. I'm still tuning in to Zoom calls or things that are related to public education in our state right now, but I'm also trying to take a breath. I don't want to just not be thoughtful about where I'm spending my time going forward. I am still the director at our little volunteer library here in Cooper Landing, and I've been trying to get a little bit caught up on some work there and applying for several grants in the past few weeks and tackling some home projects and visiting my kids and I'm taking a breath, but I still lifelong for me, education and libraries have been my passion, and I am not going to be able to let it go. I am going to be staying involved in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I think I also I've taken a step back. It's needing a break, and but I plan to be active, and maybe even a little outspoken on what a need is, not at our borough level, but more at the state level. So I can actually provide more time now to advocating on a statewide level for education and being out of the minutiae of being on our school board. So I plan on staying active and involved. I think that that's a lot of information that I've gleaned over the past decade of being a school board member. And so I want to still provide service to our community in that regard. Yeah, be active and involved. And it is. It's hard to let go when it's become an element of who you are for so long.
Well, and as well for me, to me, a high quality public education system is so incredibly important in this place that I plan to grow older in. And I want to be a senior citizen in a place that has a high quality education system. So it feels very intimately important to me as well that my community is going to be better. The borough and our state are going to be a better place for me to live, with high quality employees in all areas if we can prioritize public education. So it feels important to me personally in that way.
Well, we've covered a lot of topics over the last hour plus. Some, would could I think we could fill quite a few hours of Kenai conversation talking about public education, but I'll throw it to you, the two of you, if there's anything else that you would like to talk about, or things you want to clear up, or just in general, the floor is yours.
I'm just sitting here laughing.
Oh, okay. I'm like, I can't tell if it glitched or.
You probably didn't appreciate the silence, but I've been chuckling.
It's totally okay if you want to leave, if we want to leave it where it was. I just, I have my questions, but sometimes I don't always get to what people actually want to talk about. So
I
it's.
actually, you froze and I missed like the last 30 seconds.
Oh, I was just saying the floor is yours if there's anything else that you wanted to talk about, or just in general things that I didn't bring up or mention that you feel like you want people to know.
Yeah, I feel like, it's important to be active and involved. I think what I want people to know is to treat the incoming school board members gently. They all have run incredible campaigns. They have a lot of energy, and I think they're going to make great choices. Again, the school board is something that really sets the overall arching direction of the school district. And keep that in mind as you communicate with them and let them know your desires and wants. And I just hope that everybody stays active and involved and realizes that we're all on the same team. We all want the same thing. We want a great education for children on the peninsula. And as things get difficult and hard decisions are brought up, let's all keep that in mind and try to get a path forward that it really truly is best for the greatest number of people on the peninsula.
And I don't think I can say that any better than Zen, but I agree and appreciate we are all on the same team. And I think that just focusing on intentions and making sure that our intentions are good and that we are prioritizing children. And for sure, treat the board gently. It is a challenging job, and I can say that even after one term, I did not feel like I had learned everything. Like, it takes at least a couple terms to get your footing under you and really see what's going on. And so I wish the board well in the coming challenges.
And become active and involved in our schools. Go volunteer. Show up in the classroom, and it will change your perspective greatly. So that's what I encourage the community to do. Become active and involved in the schools.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. Go visit your school and see how you can help.
That'll be all for this week's episode of the Kenai Conversation. Thank you so much again to Zen Kelly and Virginia Morgan for joining me. As a reminder, you can hear the Kenai Conversation every Wednesday at 10 a.m. and Saturday at 5 p.m. here on KDLL. You can also find the show on our website at kdll.org. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Thanks for listening. Thank you.